Have you ever come across an odd myth, strange story, weird history, or something that just made you scratch your head and say to yourself, you know, I'd love to know a little bit more about that? Well, you're in luck, and you're in the right place listening to the right podcast, because this is The Story Of. And welcome back to the next episode of the Story Of podcast, where each week we choose a topic, research it individually, we share nothing with each other, then we meet back up to discuss what we have found, and that is the episode that you are listening to now. I'm Smith.
I'm Mike.
And we have a phenomenal guest this week that we are super, super proud to have on. He is a retired special operations aviator, Bigfoot, and UFO analyst, the host of Calling All Beings. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome DJ. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey! Thank you, brothers. It is so awesome to be on and talk Bigfoot. Any opportunity to talk Bigfoot, it's like I can't be bothered with sleep right now when there's an hour to talk Bigfoot. So Vinny knows this, and I've done a deep dive into it. I am the host of Calling All Beings. We are on, actually, I got to shut down my podcast app from Apple is going to try to download episodes, and we're not going to interrupt business. We got business to take care of. We don't want to take up my bandwidth. So, yeah, I'm the host of Calling All Beings. We are on YouTube. We are on all the podcast platforms, along with Nathan and Debs. And we're bringing on this young lady named Courtney Marcassani. Hey, Paisan, how you doing? She's a Paisan. And we've been at this about 3 years. We cover UFOs, Bigfoot, and paranormal. So check us out.
Yeah, man. I was listening to your episode today at the Scandinavian Roundtable.
Yeah.
All right. So if you haven't listened to this episode, it starts off with DJ just screaming at the top of his lungs, just going apeshit. And it's amazing. And it's like, dude, I don't know, like, what it is you do to prep before an episode, but, like, you just, like, kick a fucking door down.
It has lost us some guests, too. I was trying to get a guy who had been on Discovery. He was on Dave Pilates, Missing 411, the UFO Connection, named John DeSouza. I really loved what he had to say in that episode. And I went to his LinkedIn, and one of his assistants, I believe, answered up and said, hey, do you have any episodes or links we can listen to? And I think she took one listen to my intro and said, he's busy for the rest of the year. I'm like, it's January. So, you know, I've thought of redoing that just for, I mean, we've had Lou Elizondo, we've had Jim Semivan, we've had some UFO, Bigfoot authors, we've had Doug Hychek. We've had a number of luminaries. We've had John Ramirez from the CIA. We've had a number of academians, you know, Gary Nolan and Diana Pasulka, yeah, who, you know, shares North Carolina with you guys.
Yeah.
But some people may be put off by it. So I'm thinking to redo that, even though some people like it. I don't want to not get a guest based on that. So,
well, you know, like, that's the struggle too, man. Like, I've had people. I curse like a sailor. I try not to. I do my best to try to be as good as I can be, but I also got to be me, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing about, you know, making a podcast is you got to be you, you know, otherwise what's the point, right? I mean, if you're going to try to be somebody else, then it's inauthentic and it's not worth it to me. But yeah, I understand. But
DJ, when I heard that you were coming on, the first thing I did is like, I got to check out DJing. So I started listening to some of your stuff. And the one that caught my attention was the Bigfoot Roundtable. And when you start like introducing people, you're shot out of a cannon. I'm like, dude, this guy is awesome.
You know, we want to make people feel loved and welcome. I mean, that's really what it's about.
And that's what I got from you. I got that feeling like you want people to be welcome and warm. Like, people should be excited that they're here. And, like I said before, man, I'm excited you're here.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really just about showing them they're valued, and we'll invite you guys on, and we'll want to make you feel the exact same way, because that's how we feel when somebody decides to give up their time to come on with us. That's an honor. They don't have to do it. We're not paying them, right? So,
sure. Yeah. And it's nice when the first question when you ask somebody to come on is not how many listeners do you have? once that question comes out, it's like, all right, yeah, we know where
so,
it's going.
So stupid. Oh, man. I was just trying to think of, because this is apropos, because we are inviting on a guy, I just got him booked like right before this show, named Carl Vibe. Carl the Crusher. He is a UFO researcher, and he has 3 million followers on YouTube. Wow. Last time we interviewed him, and a lot of UFO researchers are not boots on the ground people that are going to ancient sites and trying to tie in their research of the phenomenon with ancient artifacts, which obviously is a passion of yours, Smith. And Carl Vibe does that. He is, I mean, he's going to be on, I think, Beyond Skinwalker Ranch this year. He and Chris Bartel, who was the former security guard at the Skinwalker Ranch. You know Chris, right? Yeah. So I think they're both going to be on the Beyond Skinwalker series this year, I believe. Very cool. And Carl has 3 million followers. I've had paranormal guests on with 9 people in the live chat, and I felt inspired. It was fun. We were smiling through the cameras at one another, and at the end, we're like, damn, that was a great episode. And I don't care how many people watched. The fact that I've counted up about 5 countries that's population is smaller than Carl Vibe's YouTube is something we'll say to make him laugh.
It's brilliant.
You know, we brought it up last time. I counted up countries, but I couldn't care less how many. If I'm, you know, want to have a dialogue with you, I don't care. I won't even look. I won't know how many followers you have or care. I just will hear you talk and say, I want to speak to that person. That's why we got in this.
5 countries with smaller populations.
Yeah. Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Monaco, Malta, Iceland, all of those have less population than Carl Vibe's YouTube subscribers.
There you go. And I wanted to do an episode on the Icelandic gnomes. I think we had discussed doing an episode on that. So if you're interested, man, DJ, you want to come back for that episode, dude, that door is wide open for you, buddy.
Yes, and I will also contact, I know Vinny knows her. Vinny introduced me to Bergdis. She was on that.
She was on your Scandinavian roundtable. Yeah.
Yeah, we can engage with her and find out if she has any knowledge, interest, or if not, maybe she could direct us to someone that could speak to that.
Perfect. Awesome. All right, I'm down.
Try to hook that up. Yeah.
All right, so for tonight, let's get into the big guy. All right, so let's start off with this quote that I thought was very apropos, and it's from Herbert Spencer. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. This principle is contempt prior to examination. And I thought that was such, you know, the perfect quote to lead into our topic tonight, which, folks, is the big guy, which is Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you want to call him. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. This is one that I've been following for as long as I can remember. And it's also one that I've had in my back pocket for the last couple of years. And this is season 3 of our show. And, you know, I've been holding this particular topic in the back pocket. And I was like, yeah, we got to unleash this at the right time. And this is the right time. So let's get into it. I'm psyched, man. I'm happy to do this. Mike, did you do your homework? Did you do your homework? And did you watch the video I sent you?
I did.
Okay, good. All right, good. So now, I don't even have to ask you, DJ. The homework that I sent Mike was the Patterson-Gimlin AI stabilized film. So we're all familiar with the Patterson-Gimlin film. Perfect, because I imagine a lot of our discussion tonight is probably going to center around a lot of the Patterson-Gimlin film. But yeah, I mean, I went through with my research. I went a little different. But I'm excited to see what everybody's going to bring to the table tonight. So let's just kind of start off. I don't know. Let's just, DJ, start us off, man. What you said you've got some theories. I want to hear them. What's your main theories? What do you got?
So I want to just handle the placing people in boxes and saying that I'm in this camp or I'm in that camp, which is what humans do. You know, just take a look at America. We've said most of America said I'm either in the red camp or the blue camp or the left camp or the right camp or all these stupid camps. And same thing happens with this sort of woo camp and the flesh and blood camp. So my position is as follows. The context or the framework I'm going to use for this is a court of law. And I'm not going to use the rules of a civil proceeding. I'm going to use the rules in a the standard of evidence in a criminal proceeding.
Okay,
to contextualize this. So,
not the preponderance of evidence.
Not the preponderance of evidence, but beyond a reasonable doubt. I believe that Bigfoot is a 100% flesh and blood creature. So when I was at the UFO symposium in New York that James Iandoli had, our paisan, a couple of years ago, he said, one of the guests at dinner, we had dinner afterward with a whole bunch of UFO folks there. Someone had organized a dinner that we could attend and just talk about the symposium and so forth. And somebody asked me, is there not paranormal, is there a connection to UFOs? Is there any ET connection component to Bigfoot? And what I said to her is, we don't have any evidence to suggest that. Is it within the realm of possibility? Yes. Many, many things are within the realm of possibility that we didn't think were possible until we found out, that's possible. So I believe this is a 100% living, breathing, procreating, flesh and blood creature. Does that mean that there isn't a component and that it doesn't have abilities that we don't understand? I believe that's the case. People who have gotten extremely dogmatic and said, I'm in one camp, I'm in the camp that this is some sort of an entity that is coming here from an extraterrestrial origin, or this is no, it's a flesh and blood creature and I'm not investigating or not even entertaining it. I think both of those positions aren't good positions to be in, because you can't open your mind to what's possible, and there's enough credible people. So if I use this criminal trial standard of evidence, we have that 16 millimeter film. We have PhDs analysis in Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Dr. John Bindernagel, and others who have viewed that film amongst all these other researchers and anthropologists, and said, in 1967, the year of my birth, you could not have constructed a costume in that level of detail. Planet of the Apes obviously was the most high-tech costume.
Yes.
And that was basically the wrists and the headdress. Sure. They were the apes were fully clothed in that. So that was that. Plus, you're seeing this whole locomotion aspect, which is what Dr. Jeff Meldrum studied, and says you're seeing muscles moving, you're seeing the anal cleft, you're seeing the latissimus and the trapezoids and all these different muscles that he'll go into that hour and a half dissertation that he does on just the patty film. Now we're going to add to that thousands of eyewitnesses, tens of thousands of eyewitnesses that have been documented on different shows. And we haven't even talked about the Paul, I'm trying to think of the other film his son just came out with.
Paul Freeman.
The Freeman film. Thank you. It was in the watershed out there in Washington when he was working for the Forest Service. So we have those two films. We have tens of thousands of eyewitnesses. We have hair samples. We have, Jeff Meldrum has over 300 foot casts.
Footprints.
I think Cliff Berkman has over 200 foot casts.
Does Cliff have more than Meldrum, or Jeff's got
I
more than
Meldrum? I believe Meldrum, at the last that I knew, Jeff had the largest, but you know what? In the last 365 days, I saw Meldrum or met him at in Ocala last year. Who knows? Maybe Cliff does have a larger collection now. But let's say, for the purposes, several hundred foot casts.
Sure.
So beyond a reasonable doubt, this exists more than I could prove the existence of a deity or a Norse god or something like that, right? We have beyond a reasonable doubt proof that there is a flesh and blood animal in multiple states, in multiple climates, that is walking around procreating, going up to campsites, leaving foot casts, leaving handprints. Doug Hychek, Legend Meat Science 2, he's working on that. He just shot all last weekend. Where he did hypnotic regression on Bigfoot experiencers to try to bring some of these back. It's never been done on Bigfooters before. It's always been done on UFO. These regressionists have worked on UFO experiencers. So, but he found a woman in Ohio, I think it is, with lots of handprints and all kinds of things that she has basically a habituation site in her house. I think it's Snow White Bigfoot, that young lady, right? Wonderful lady. I heard her interviewed and was fascinated. So there's beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, what a lot of these people just want to close the door on is that you have multiple credible individuals that are saying, I saw eye glow. Okay. That's not in the presence of a flashlight walking down a lonely road in Westchester and there's a raccoon sitting in the bushes and you shine it over there and go, oh, there's eye shine. No, something that's tall where the eyes are far divergent from one another, far apart than a human, and without an external light source, the eyes are glowing. That's something, that's an ability we don't understand. We also don't understand how they're able to approach campsites in a loud manner and leave completely silently, or approach completely silently and leave with a... So there are many aspects of the creature that I think it may have abilities that we don't understand, including the ability to project emotions on people. People to just be walking in the woods and go, all of a sudden they feel danger, you know, that infrasound. So that is the part. Can we prove what that is? No, but I wouldn't discount that. And I would want to, if I were a flesh and blood researcher that were in the field, I would want to talk to those people and try to figure out if I, you know, if I find them credible and how many people were there and, you know, get all these details. And unfortunately, a lot of people being humans, I got to be on this side or I got to be on that side. There's no, it can be both. Don't think Bigfoot's an alien. I don't have any evidence that it is stepping through portals and into our consensus reality. I'm not saying it's never happened, but we don't have any evidence to suggest it, right? We just don't have it. If we had it, you know, hey, I'd be willing to look at that, but we just don't. So that is basically my position stated in the not the best way, but that's basically it.
No, that's brilliant though, man. Like, because there are multiple camps. You know, other than the just, you know, exist, doesn't exist camp, there is, and I have just over the last couple of years been exposed to the interdimensional concept, the connections between UFOs as well. And I never thought of things of that nature. I've always been, in my mind, the flesh and blood, you know, undiscovered, you know, primate, North American primate type, you know, camp. But it's interesting to see all these new, you know, these new theories that come out. You know, I mean, and again, I'm just some schmuck who does a podcast in North Carolina. What do I know? Like, who am I to tell, you know, to say, no, this has never happened, or this person, or this thing doesn't exist, right? And I don't think I'm arrogant enough to be able to say that. I mean, I guess I could, right? But, you know, to me, I guess I feel like that's just arrogant, right? For me to just say, you know, I'm being honest with you, I've never been on a Bigfoot hunt. I really want to. I've never spent time in the Pacific Northwest. I've never gone up to Alaska. I've never spent, you know what I mean? I've never gone anywhere and really put boots on the ground, you know? And so, like, who am I to say that it doesn't exist when I've never done anything to either say it does or it doesn't, you know? And I want to get into that a little bit more. You know, I got some stats and things that will go, you know, into that. But Mike, where are you on this, bud? Where are your thoughts?
So I'm skeptical. I mean, I want to believe in it badly. Like, I really do. And then I start to think that, like, all right, well, I look to more of the logistics behind it. Like, okay, if they're in the woods, okay, that makes sense. That's why you're finding prints. You know, you hear about there's different attacks. You know, they say that if someone's being attacked by a Bigfoot, then more than likely they're not surviving. So people that go missing, they're saying... A lot of missing person reports, you know, we don't hear about because, you know, a Bigfoot got them somewhere, anywhere. The one thing I question is the fact of how many are there, you know, where Are they mostly generally located? Why haven't we found one that was dead at some point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't found a body. We haven't found any bones. So, you know, I started going down the road myself of like, well, if I was hiding from somebody or something, I mean, they would probably have a good way to keep themselves safe and secure away from people that they feel may be dangerous to them, maybe hiding in caves and, you know, in the bottom of like, you know, caverns. And there's so much more going on that we don't even know or can't even comprehend. So I want to believe, I really want to, but I started thinking the logistics behind it. I'm like, well, how are they living? Like, how are they? They're big, so they need a large amount of food.
Sure.
You know, are they surviving on humans? Are they surviving on animals? Are they eating plants? Is it a combination of both? You know, and when they're that big, they're not just living off just vegetation, because they'd have to consume a lot of vegetation. So it makes me think that, yes, they're meat eaters. They're carnivores. Yes, they're really more omnivores.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a massive amount of protein intake, right, that needs to sustain the energy levels of something that large as well.
Right. Yeah. But I want to believe. I want more information. And the more I kept going down trying to find more information, it started leading me to all those thoughts and theories, but not everything I found was like, well, this happened, but this is, you know, it was debunked. Mm-hmm. This isn't real. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I'm like, just give me something real. That's what I want.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike. So one of my favorite hosts, the most prolific host in all of Bigfoot, is without question Wes Germer, who thankfully really has evolved over the course of when he started his show, when he and his brother Woody were terrified, when they were looking for a hunting spot. Basically, they were doing a nighttime selection of where they were going to hunt the next day, and they were accosted by a family of Bigfoot. In fact, the single track from a car perspective that they were going to exit with was being blocked by the alpha male, who then went down on all fours, and it terrified Wes. They reported it, and the Rangers laughed at him and said, get out of here, and stuff like that. And shortly thereafter, Wes joined this Sasquatch Chronicles and took it over, and he's by far in the way. But he says, so two things I'm going to say. If someone says to me, what camp are you in? I'm in the DJ camp. That's my camp. So I don't care what, if you're in this flesh and blood camp, I don't care if you're in the woo camp. I don't care if you're in the skeptic camp. I'm taking in, the reason I refer to myself as a Bigfoot analyst, which make Doug Hychek go, wow, I don't hear people say that. Right, because I'm not a researcher. I've been out a few times, and I'm going to go out some more times. In fact, I'm going to go out with the Sasquatch Brigade here in Georgia. But I'm in my camp. I'm taking it all in and trying to be logical. But what I won't say is I want to believe. I don't want to believe or not want to believe. And Wes used to say on his show, I want to believe that this is an undiscovered primate and that it's not part human. Why? I leave it with you. Why? What does it matter? I want to know what it is. I don't want it to be anything.
Yeah,
I don't want it to be ape. I don't want it to be human. I don't want it to be half human or 40% ape or 60%. I don't care what it is. I just want to know what it is. Once you have a want that I want to believe, now that's going to skew your analysis of what you're looking at. True. And that's why I say, I regard the folks that are in the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. They have done more for Bigfoot than I will ever do in my lifetime. However, they've named it. They've said in the name, it's a North American wood ape. So now, does that have the potential to skew how you view the creature? I believe it does. I'm not saying I'm smarter than them. I'm not. I mean, they have, you know, PhDs like Kathy Strain that are part of their group, and brilliant, brilliant folks that work over there. You know, Daryl Collier is, you know, another Air Force guy like me. He's flying intel linguist type of dude, Dizzo type. So they have brilliant people. But when you assign that name to it, now we can direct our research towards proving what we've named it. Whether we're doing that consciously,
sure,
and they're probably not, but perhaps unconsciously. And so I don't want to believe anything about it.
Yeah. And there's a potential to discount evidence that doesn't necessarily line up with what you want it to be.
That's right. Right?
And yeah, therefore, right. Kind of, what are they saying? That's, you know, tunnel vision almost. So,
yeah.
So here's one of my theories. And I, you know, Mike, I hear you saying, you know, they're very plausible questions. You know, my brother is complete 100% skeptic. He's like, they never found a body. And they, look, I get that. Those things, what things to point out. Sure. I get that. However, you know, there is so much, you know, anthropology that we can look into, you know, to talk about, you know, death rituals and things like that. And cultures from all over the world all practice some sort of death culture, whether it be burying, whether it be, you know, putting in tombs or so let's, you know what I mean? Like, so let's look at it in the fact of there have been so many instances and incidents of people finding, you know, trees bent over in X shapes and creating some sort of symbology, right? Some sort of symbolism to either mark a territory or whatever it may mean, which then you can connect. There's a possibility of culture there, right? If there's a possibility of culture, then we are talking about something on a higher level of thinking. And therefore, why could they not tap into this idea of a death culture or a death procession, whatever it may be? What if they are buried? Who knows, right? We don't necessarily know that. What if their bodies are put somewhere very, very special or some, you know, somewhere very, very sacred that we don't necessarily understand either, you know? And so there's, to me, when I think about this idea of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, I like to try to connect the dots as far as logic and reason as well. And so here's where I kind of went into it. Like, where can they live? Where can they sustain? My mind always goes in the United States, at least to the Pacific Northwest. And I think that's, you know, the most probable place where you would find the largest population. So we're looking at 16 national forests and a national grassland compromising of an area of 24.7 million acres in size. That is uninhabited forest. That is 24.7 million acres in size. That's insanely big. That's massive. The Olympic Peninsula itself is so thick forested, right? 10% of the world is covered by glaciers. Another further 19% is barren land, deserts, dry salt flats, beaches, sand dunes, exposed rocks. All of that is this uninhabitable land, right? Everything that's not that is what we call habitable. So of that habitable land on Earth, 38%, one third of that is forests, right? That's an immense amount of land that is forested that we human beings are not encroached on, right? And that is shrinking, obviously, every year. But that's a crazy amount of land. Canada has 38.7% forest. The United States has got 33.9% forest. You know, like that's crazy. You know, that's absolutely an insane amount. Now, also, let's think, I'm a history guy, right? So I think of human geography. Where do we move to? Where do we live to, right? You go back to the 1700s and 1800s, the majority of the population was living in rural areas, right? Now, the majority of populations are living in urban areas. So today, according to the UN, 55% of the world's population lives in urban areas. And that's expected to increase to be about 68% in 2050. So I went to the census.gov. And so urban population, urban areas, that is defined as densely developed residential, commercial, and other non-residential areas now account for 80% of the United States population, with only 20% you know, in the rural area. So if we have only 20% of our population living in areas on the outskirts of this immensely forested areas, there's not going to be all that many crazy amounts of sightings that we would expect there to be, right? You know what I mean? Like, there's just think, I mean, the majority, 80% of the United States population is in urban areas. That's not where Bigfoot is. That's not where Bigfoot is.
Do you know how big the Pine Barrens is in our tri-state area?
Yeah, it's massive.
1.1 million acres. Oh. So we don't, and Whitehall, New York is one of the most prolific Bigfoot sighting places in the state. We don't need to go to the Washington State to find Bigfoot. They just happen to have the most sightings there, and they also have local legislation protecting their Skamania County. You can't shoot at one of them. They're protected, and they're also areas. So they don't make legislation for things like that that don't exist. So, I mean, in Florida, there's also, I could show you, I'm trying to remember what county in Florida that it talks about the skunk ape, or they call it a swamp ape. They call it a swamp ape that you're not allowed to shoot at it. So the question of why you're not finding bones, if you took, you know, potentially human type intelligence and applied it to an animal of that size and strength and omnivores, Mike, I think, stated that we believe that they are omnivores based on people seeing them pick berries and eat different things. We've also, hunters have had them go pick up a deer in front of them and drape it over their shoulder and walk away. Hunters in Pennsylvania have seen them make a choke point when they were out hunting, go like this, run the deer into a choke point, and the other one was waiting, and they heard horrific sounds, and next thing you know, the deer all have broken legs so that they can't run away, and then they take them, and they've put them up in trees and so forth, and then they go and keep hunting till they have enough protein that they feel, and by the way, they eat the guts and not the meat, and then it's an enormous amount of intelligence. Second thing I just want to say is one guy who, by virtue of being on television, James Bobo Fay, who we all know as Bobes,
yes,
from Finding Bobo. Bigfoot.
Not personally, but I know him, Bobo, yeah.
Oh, he's wonderful intellect for this topic and very, very open-minded on this topic. He has had the ability, based on who he is and his fame and popularity that he earned on that show, to be invited to many, many properties to come and investigate Bigfoot. And he has said these are the things I'm sure of. There were three. One of them is that they have a language. The second one was that they bury their dead. And the third one, I don't remember, but that they bury their dead. So if I said that to you, I don't have any basis to tell you that. I don't know that. I haven't invested the time in the woods that James Bobo Fay has in, not even in the United States, in other countries, because people will invite him, pay him, house him to come to their property and investigate. He probably has been more places than most anybody who, if I took the most venerable New York or Pennsylvania Bigfooter or Georgia or North Carolina Bigfooter, they probably have not been anywhere near as many investigations as James Bobo Fay has. So I put a lot of weight in what he says, just like Wes Germer, because Wes Germer's talked to everybody. Well, James has actually been out with everybody. So that's what he thinks is happening with their dead, which is consistent with what human behavior. So the third thing I want to point out, we just talked about the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. They have been in the forest for over a decade. And they don't spend days there, and they don't spend weeks there. They spend months in these cabins with the object to bring out a body. And they'll come, they hit the cabin, they do all these different things. They haven't killed one. What does that tell you? And that's all I'm going to say, but just to get your reaction on that. Over a decade with really bright people, hunters, experienced people, they have PhDs, and their goal was, we're going to get a body to prove to science that this exists. Haven't gotten one. What does that tell you about how smart the creature is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Going to fall for that trap. It knows.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, if you look back at the Native American lore as well, right, it's every tribe in America, every American tribe, Native American tribe, has got some sort of lore that connects back to Bigfoot, Sasquatch, in some sort of fashion. And it's, you know, like, to me, it's, again, I go back to that word arrogant, where who are we to look at these groups of people whose lineage goes back thousands of years? And when they're like, yeah, these things exist. And, you know, who are we to be like, no, they don't. You're full of shit. Like, you know, you're absolutely full of shit. Right. Like, that's arrogant. Yeah. And that reminds me of the stories of these giant hairy ape men that were being told about Africa for hundreds of years and hundreds of years. And the natives were sitting there and they're telling everybody, like, no, these things are real. These things are real. And the colonizers were like, yeah, okay, you're full of shit. And then they found one in 1902. And that is what we call today the mountain gorilla. And so up until 1902, the mountain gorilla would have been what we would consider, right, Ivan T. Sanderson's cryptozoological, you know, area, right? That's where mountain gorillas were. They were in that cryptozoological, you know, gray area. But now we know that they're real. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and so again, it's like we have this such amazing technology. We have, obviously, I mean, our technology is great. And I think that gives us this false inflated arrogance that we are so much smarter than we think we are. And if it's not right here and we can't find it, then it doesn't exist and it's not real. And I have trouble attaching myself to that. You know, like, again, it's just for me, it kind of seems arrogant. But Mike, you are a man of medicine. Where does the majority of our medicines come from? Is it like, are they manufactured now or their roots in nature? Like, what have you found?
A lot of it's roots in nature and a lot of plants and, you know, things are then derived from there and, you know, manipulated chemically. And, you know, so a lot of it is synthetic, but a lot of the original stuff that we found is all based off plants.
Sure. So could then the argument be made that if these beings are out there, that they would have knowledge of these plants, right, to keep them healthy and them going too, you know, which, you know, something that I've always thought about as well. Like what happens, like, if I cut myself somewhere out in the woods, I'm going to die of like sepsis in like 3 weeks. Yeah. Like I'm dead, man. You know, but hey, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like going to put some leaf on my arm and bleed to death, you know, but like I would imagine being able to live in that area, live out there for as long. I mean, you know, whatever, have your entire life out there. You have to have some knowledge of medicine and medicinal purposes of leaves and whatever it is, nature. And, you know, so anyways, that's what I was thinking. You'd be the perfect guy to ask for that, you know?
You know, it's funny, man, when you were saying that, the thing that pops in my head is the fact that, you know, we think that we're smart. We think we know everything. And just like you said, like, if you cut yourself out in the woods, do you know what to do? Do you know how to stop the bleeding? Do you know what plant would be safe to use to put on it, to treat it? What has antibiotic properties, antimicrobial versus something that's poison? No, most people won't. I would say 90% of the people, if you got hurt in the woods, wouldn't know what the hell to do. You'd be dead.
Yeah.
So I think we're smart in the fact that we know how to use the things that we have, but at the end of the day, we're dumb people using things that smart people figured out.
That's a good point, too. But, you know, a lot of the people that know like those medicinal properties would be these native groups, right, that are out there. You know what I mean? And so much of the Native American lore talks about Bigfoot as a brother, as like a nature brother, almost as like a family member, a watchdog over the forest, right, over nature itself, you know, and which would line up perfectly, you know, with that hypothesis as well. But, you know, I came across another interesting, and I didn't see this one coming at all. I was looking back at the numbers again, population numbers. If I were to ask you guys, where do you think the most urban areas in the United States are? Where would you, like, just give me a geographic location. Where do you think the most urbanized areas of the United States is?
Coastal Northeast.
Okay, coastal Northeast. DJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Coastal Northeast, okay. and then the West Coast.
I thought the same thing too. Yeah. We're all wrong, actually. The Pacific Division in the West region, which is Alaska, California, Oregon, and Washington, they are the most urban areas. 91% of the population in those areas reside in urban areas, which means forested area that we have is the least populated in those forest areas. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, if we continue to have all of this urban living and we've got all these folks that are out there going, it doesn't exist. Well, we're not living. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not in the areas that we need to be in right, for us to say fully. And I'm in the boat of, look, I can't obviously prove that Bigfoot exists. However, I see a lot more evidence, DJ, kind of what you were saying, more evidence that suggests that it does, just in my opinion.
Oh, in a criminal trial, it's done. In a criminal trial, we've already, I mean, it's convicted already in terms of that, because there's just, you know, we would just bring in witness after witness after witness, and we'd bring in foot casts, and we bring in those films, and
sure,
and that's a conviction in a court of law. But I want to turn something around, what we said about the North American Wood Ape Conservancy and their goal of bringing in a body. If I ask you guys, if we were to go to the Congo River Basin and say, we're going to give a crack team of armed folks a decade to bring in a silverback gorilla, what do you think the chances are that they fail? I'm saying there's no way they fail if you give them that long, because we already have had people who they've taken photos of gorillas. They've been in their encampments. They've been close to gorillas. So there's no question that if you give a talented, armed, smart group of people an encampment somewhere in the Congo River Basin, and your goal is you are going to get us a gorilla body. You're going to shoot one and kill one and bring it in for science. There's no doubt that they're not going to fail. They will bring one in, because we have a video of these creatures. You know, live National Geographic, it's right over there, video. That camera could be a 7 or 10 man.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
And so there's no question that they could bring one in. The reason they're not able to catch up with these Bigfoot creatures is the aforementioned, that they have some sort of intellect that goes beyond, and people who have looked in the eyes of them and also looked into the eyes of gorillas say, I mean, in a class A scenario, say, I'm seeing a sentience and an intelligence that does not match up with seeing the gorilla at the zoo. So I think that's why they know our tendencies. They've probably watched us evolve as Europeans who came to this country when there were only them and Native Americans. They know our tendencies, and they've just watched our tactics. They know that little trail cam. People said, how did they see these trail, this camouflage? I said, if I took this trail cam and put it in your cubicle, well, let's say they didn't see you put it up. Let's say they didn't see you put it up at all. If I put this trail cam in your cubicle and you walked in, would you notice it? Of course you would.
That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, the thing is this big. And you say, oh, that wasn't here when I came to work this morning. Then I went and used the Keurig machine, and I came back and it's there. Well, what do you think the Bigfoot's going to do if they're habitating in that area? They're going to say, oh, look, that doesn't belong here. It's got a Velcro strap on the tree. So just like our home is here, you know, Les Stroud, the survivor man, said, you know, he is a bushcraft expert. He has all the skills that you guys just spoke about that he needs to survive in the wild with nothing, with almost nothing. You know, a couple of primitive weapons. There's actually some, if anybody who wants to, if you go on Hulu Live or Hulu Plus, there's some great bushcraft shows where these guys get dropped off in a helicopter and they tell them you have to make it 15 miles that way or whatever in this mountainous terrain, and all they have is like one tool, whatever that is, sometimes nothing, and they'll go and make, they'll take an animal bone and, you know, I think they might have one tool like a knife and that's it. But from that, they're able to make water containers and kill something and eat something and so forth and treat themselves and so forth. So Les Stroud said, I am nothing compared to Bigfoot in terms of a survivalist in the woods. Nothing. And he is survivor man.
Yeah, he's literally known as. Yeah. He had a series a couple of years ago where it was like a 4 or 5 part series where he went out looking for Bigfoot. And
more than 4 or 5.
Was it? Yeah, that was a good series. Yeah. That was good.
No, just that's the intellect that we're talking about, is that they know how to survive in their environment. They're masters of the environment, and they're much smarter than, and the guy who's recognized as one of the best in our country is telling you, I'm nowhere close to what they are.
Yeah. What if, and I know this is like crazy, but like what if, and I keep going back to what you bring up too with the intelligence, but also I don't know, man. Like, I'm not completely sold that they're not, or they don't necessarily have some sort of psychic ability. I'm not, I think that's a possibility for sure. What if they're like mountain monks? You know what I mean? Like Tibetan monks are up on the mountains and they meditate and they, you know, like you've seen these videos of monks that are on top of a, you know, a mountain covered in snow and they're able to keep their body temperature at a certain body. Like, what if they are
breathing.
Like these?
Yep.
Yeah. What if these are like, they practice that? Like, what if they're like mountain monks that are, have some way got in touch with some sort of ability to use for whatever, however they can, to dodge us, you know? Like, I don't necessarily think that's completely out of the realm of possibility as well. I mean, we know the mind is an incredibly powerful thing. And if they are a subspecies or some sort of species of human, half human, whatever, you know, their brains, we know there's intelligence. There has to be, there's intelligence. There's, you know what I mean? They make us look like fools because we can't find them. You know, like there has to be an intelligence there. So following that line of thought and that line of reasoning, why couldn't they, you know, like all the transcendentalists of the 19th century, they all talk about getting in touch with our human side and getting in touch with our nature by going into nature, right? And so these guys are the very, you know, epitome of it. So what's to say that they haven't developed some sort of psychic ability to what I don't know, whatever that would you know, what that would mean. But I mean, I can't say that it's not, in my mind, at least, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
The only thing I'm thinking about is I think if anything, if they're there, what if, like you said before, what if they were interdimensional? And that's why, like, you see them, but they're gone. Like, literally, they're gone, like, really quick. Like, and I know we were joking, I don't know, maybe we were joking around before, but, like, what if they were, you know, through portals and they have these other dimension abilities? And, you know, there's a lot of thought, even when we were talking with Vinny about aliens and their interdimensional space. And we may not even be able to see them just because they're in a different dimension than us. Mm-hmm. So there's so many things that I think we're becoming more open to, that this may be a possibility. These things may be possible because they're using a different space that we can't even imagine how to get to.
Sure. Different vibration. And there are a lot of Native American tribes that, you know, there's the Eastern or the East Coast. And I might even have it wrong. I don't remember, but there's a difference in belief of Bigfoot on the East Coast and the West Coast of the Native American tribes. And one of the coasts is a flesh and bone. And the other coast is more mystical of portals and interdimensionality. So, you know, like, I don't know. I love the show Expedition Bigfoot. You guys ever watch that show?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I have watched it.
I love that show. And I like their take a scientific approach to it. And this past season was pretty crazy because there was an episode where they go into a cave and they actually did touch upon this idea of interdimensionality, which I was shocked because I was like, shit, like, I didn't see that coming. But there was this one episode where one of the people were in there and they're in a cave and they're walking past and there's a thermal and like a camera in there as well. And they walk past this spot with like a little ledge where they heard something and there's nothing there, and they leave and they go back to the footage later on, and on this ledge was something sitting there that this person walked past and the camera clearly cannot pick up, but the thermal was picking up the shape of a body sitting there. It was insane. Yeah. You know, and I was it blew my mind of I wonder if it's a possibility. And I think DJ, you had said it before too, is look, there's anything is possible, you know? And I think that the moment, like you had said earlier, the moment where we start to label things and the moment where we start to put things in camps and categories, I think that closes our minds off to what the potential is and the potential that we can find, you know? And I think that keeping this open mind is the best thing possible. I don't know, just in my opinion. But again, I'm just some schmuck that does a podcast. So
you're just analyzing everything that you're seeing. And as you learn more, you know, you'll develop your hypotheses and you'll move and you'll change. And that's a good thing. You know, if you're just staying in one spot, then that means you're really not evolving with the information that you're getting that you believe is from credible sources, which comes from in here, right? What you think. So, I mean, we had, let's see, it's called A Flash of Beauty 2. And in that one of the researchers, I'm going to fail at her name, this young lady. And by young lady, she's probably close to my age. And she's shooting out in the woods, and she shoots a small Bigfoot. And when it moves, it looks like, in person to her, it just looked like this black blob, and it, you know, it bolted. But then it sort of, on the film, it looks like it pixelated. And the pixelation, you know, is consistent with the trees, you know, with the trees blocking it and so forth. It was really weird. And also, there was that other, the Dave Pilates, Missing 411, The Hunted, where Dr. Bruce Maccabee and his wife, you know, had that thing where she's in her tree stand there in Ohio and saw something that looked like Predator, you know, that pixelation
yes,
thing.
Yes, I remember that episode, yes.
Right. So there may be something there, what you're saying, Mike. I'm not close to it. I don't have, we can't prove it at this point. We don't have evidence of it, but I'm open to it. I'm certainly open to it. Also think that you guys should look at A Flash of Beauty 2, where they interview. Okay, so I'll send you the YouTube link so that you guys can have it. So it's Rich Germeau, and Rich is a Native American law enforcement officer who's been with several different agencies in Washington, including he was Marine Corps and law enforcement in the Marine Corps. I think he also worked for a federal agency as law enforcement as well. So he has several different in his career law enforcement positions that he's held. And to make a long story really short, he had a sighting that freaked him out when he was in local law enforcement, and told his buddies about it, and they're kind of like, you know, shoving him off on it. And it was, I think it was a road crossing is what he had, what he saw the first time. So he got really into it, and he had, he said at one point, 40 or 50 trail cams out. And at one point, he was going to change SD cards on his trail cam, and he's there, and he's at a cam, and he's fumbling with his keys, and he starts getting that feeling of, I'm in danger, something's watching me kind of thing. And he's fumbling with his keys. And he's like, this is not real. This is not happening. Because you're looking at an alpha male tough guy. He goes, I don't let anything intimidate me. Nobody intimidates me, was his words. And he's fumbling, and he changes out the SD card, and he looks over there, and he sees one, you know, 40 yards away, beyond where his truck is, basically, in between he and his vehicle. And he's just about having a heart attack. He takes the SD card, he closes the thing back up, you know, and that's at the point at which he sees it. And he turns and he bolts for the road, which was 75 yards behind him. It was closer than his vehicle. And he just figured, if I'm standing on a road, I'm safer than me going anywhere near this thing. But it really scared him. To close the loop on it, he started having dreams that was saying, stop looking for us, stop looking for us. And it went on for a couple of months, which led to what you guys were talking about, this possible ability. And you'll hear researchers that are famous say, I don't believe in mind speak. It's all BS and all that. And I'm like, okay, you don't know that. If it didn't happen to you, you don't know. You know, there's enough people that have thought that. So Rich Germeau, of law enforcement officer, he lives in a suburban neighborhood. He comes home one night after this, you know, having these dreams. He opens the car door and hears. He said it was 20 yards away in the wood line. And he took that to mean, now we know where you live.
Where you live, yeah. Oh, shit.
Now we know where you live. Or we know where you live.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That is basically when he, for all intents and purposes, stopped. I will send you both of the Rich Germeau Flash of Beauty interviews, which are available for free on YouTube. And I would say between the two of them, you're about 80% is extreme value of his experiences, things that have happened, and how he's come to his hypotheses. And he was even involved in the Melba Ketchum DNA study that was done, and what was valuable in there and what maybe wasn't valuable. You know what? I shouldn't say what wasn't valuable. A lot of it was her talking about that she thought angels were involved, and she just, you know, maybe went off the rails a little bit for a scientific study, but that the study and the collection was done well, and that there was good science behind what she did. That's what he says. I don't know. That's not something I could comment on. I'm just repeating. But Rich Germaux talks about a lot of these things about, you know, how do you have dreams? You know, stop looking for, I mean, how does that happen? And then they show up at your house.
Yeah, then to correlate with a real life experience as well on top of that, for sure.
One more thing I want to tell you guys about Rich Germaux. Rich Germaux used to build an A-frame. He would go to his habituation sites where he would leave apples and stuff. He would build this A-frame type of thing, and he would balance a stick on top of it, right? So he would find things that would have the right sort of things that he could wedge something in there, and it would balance. So he made a certain design that he doesn't show you what the design is. And the reason he did this is that he didn't want someone to be able to mess with him and create. So nobody, he didn't go out in the woods with other people so they could mess with him and make this design that he would leave for Bigfoot. And he said he was driving down kind of I think he was doing security at like a shipyard or whatever for his federal law enforcement gig. And there was a certain access road or spur road that he was talking about. And he said he was going down that road one night, and he saw a bunch of sticks in a circle, and then in the middle of the sticks, so it looked like they were torn and just thrown into a circle, and in the middle of it was that thing that he put in the woods. In the middle of the road, he said you couldn't go 10 minutes on this road without traffic coming down it. He averaged, he said, about 10 minutes, there would be a car coming down that road. So how did they know, how did somebody know he'd be coming down that road and see that exact structure that he built as a communication tool with them?
Which, again, goes back to kind of what I was saying in the beginning. If there is communication, then there's higher thinking, and there's bound to be a culture. There has to be, right? If there are family and familial and lineage connections, there's got to be a culture along with it, right? Because there has been, I mean, if you look at the Patterson-Gimlin film, it's Patty. It's a female, which goes back to, like, Bill Munns is, you know, if you're familiar with Dr. Meldrum and Bill Munns and Isaac Tien, who then they are the ones that took that video and AI'd it pretty much and stabilized the entire thing. And Bill Munns is a, you know, 40 years in special effects. He's done, you know, Return of the Living Dead, Beastmaster, Swamp Thing. Fantastic. Said, perfect.
We couldn't have done it. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And he was the dude that did Swamp Thing was like, there's no way in 1967. And DJ, you brought that up too. You know, you even if you look at the Planet of the Apes, right, Under the Planet of the Apes in 1970, which came out, even then, if you compare, there's no comparison. And the fact the striations, but she's got breasts, which is insane. When she does that move, you can see there are clearly breasts.
Mammary glands.
Yes.
No question.
There's no question about it. Who the hell in their right mind would construct a gorilla suit and go as far as making floppy breasts, right?
Making it a girl.
Yeah.
At all.
Like, who would have done that? Like, who would have thought that? Yeah. Whose forethought would have been that? And I'm not trying to be like a pervert, but they move like you know what I mean? Like they move like you had said before that there's a butt crack. There's a legitimate butt crack. There is, you know, again, Meldrum talks about this and actually reached out to Jeff Meldrum to do the show. And we didn't hear back from him, unfortunately. I'm sure he's very busy. Yeah, I mean, when they break down that video in that way, like, and I think to me, one of the strongest parts is when she takes her foot, takes a step with her right foot, there is the part where the toes come up very high off the foot, which again, if you're creating a suit, you're going to create it over some sort of walking boot or a sneaker of some sort. You're not going to have the ability to move that toe up like that, which then also talks about the ability to grab as well, which is very much like a primate type of characteristic. But it's the calf muscle, when you look at that right foot that comes down and you see the calf muscle flex, there's no way that a suit like that would be form fitted to a human being that tight to actually create muscle striations like that. I don't know, man. It's that video. I know it's been around for 50 years. And the fact, I mean, the job that they did in stabilizing that video is incredible, you know, and there's been various people, you know, that have gone out and have tried to figure out the size of it. I've heard between 6 and 7 feet. And historically speaking, you know, female Sasquatch are generally thought to be shorter as well. You know, so
different body type.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, and
not the V tapered.
No. And the back, the length of the back is massive. And I was just watching something where they compared the length of the back to the length of Arnold Schwarzenegger's back, who's a massive dude and very big. And his back was about half the size of whatever it was.
Oh.
That was
her awful. Traps are enormous.
Yeah.
Doug Hychek actually found what looked like a contusion on her right thigh. So think of where you get a Charlie horse. So if you were to take where your knee joint is and come just above, I believe Doug Hychek found that, pointed it out to Dr. Meldrum, and now it's something that they focused on. You could see where the hair was missing there and that she was injured there. So those are things that, again, you know, first of all, you would never make the monster girl. If you want to scare people, you're going to make the monster guy. Just, yeah, I mean, that's just,
but that's
what
just
you
basic
done.
Filmmaking, too, in the 1960s sure. when the classic horror movies are coming out. I mean, maybe a little bit later on, but yeah, of course. Right. The first iteration is going to be male, I would imagine. You know, you get Frankenstein's bride afterwards.
Right. That's right. That's right. I forgot about Frankenstein's bride. So yeah, the film is really unimpeachable. There's really, again, in a criminal trial, it's beyond a reasonable doubt, based on all the other evidence that you could bring into court. You're convicted on that. So it's really now, I think it's down to trying to figure out what it is and what its habits are and what we can learn about the creature itself. Just coming from a UFO perspective, you know, people will say we need to kill one and bring it in. I could take the position and have taken the position in certain discussions as to why, because if you come from the community where people have been abducted, you know, UFO abductions, and if Dave Pilates and all his information of people, you're hiking with your children, you've got, you know, dad up front, you've got mom somewhere next to him, you've got Sally and Johnny, and then, you know, you guys stop, you get a drink of water, you take a couple, eat your power bars, you take off on the trail, you turn around, and Johnny or Sally is missing, but there's no scream and there's no anything. And John D'Souza believes it doesn't lend itself to a sort of terrestrial abduction by an animal, like a Bigfoot or a bear or a cougar, because you're going to you know, you're going to hear something, right? More than likely, that maybe portals open up and they go through a portal and then they're gone, or some sort of a UFO thing like it in his movie where they picked up that moose and just took it. We don't know. But if you come from that perspective that UFO abductions have happened, and I believe they do based on people that we've interviewed, then if you're okay with a family member of yours being abducted by UFO because it's a higher intelligence and it's in the name of science, then okay, you're the same guy that should go out and shoot a Bigfoot and kill one and bring it in for science. I'm not okay with someone, a friend of or family member of mine, being taken by a higher intelligence for any reason, scientific or otherwise. Therefore, I wouldn't want to, you know, change the game and say, well, I'm going to go ahead and shoot one of these creatures and then try to, you know, get a 4x4 and drag it in so that they can name it science and go, what? Yay, DJ, you found out, you solved the mystery. The government probably already had, I mean, I have 30 years in government total between active duty, civilian, and contractor, all these different things. I'm sure they probably have bagged one of these creatures. and have studied it and know what it is, and that's why we don't hear about it, because it exists in some sort of a gray area. And just for reference, when you were talking about open areas, Doug Hajcek, who is one of the most, and I'm sorry I keep name dropping him, but I've spoken with him a lot lately and gotten to know him, and he believes that they exist on the edges of society, not necessarily that they need to be 100 miles deep in the forest. Not that they don't exist there, but he believes, with all that he knows, his own encounter, all the people that he's interviewed, and all the studies that he's done, that they, in many cases, exist on the edges because people have seen them in suburban neighborhoods and coming up to houses and so forth. So, because they're curious about us.
Sure.
As you would expect, as we
look
are about
that. Like Portlock, Alaska, right? I mean, Portlock, Alaska is just such a crazy story itself. We actually did that. I think we did that on Towns Abandoned for Fucked Up Reasons. And I think Bill brought on one of our co-hosts, Bill brought up Portlock. That's like, you know, like where they almost massacred an entire town. Like everybody left. There's no, except for the postmaster. I think the postmaster was the only person that stayed by afterwards. But yeah, Portlock is just, that story is crazy.
Okay, Smith and Mike, I don't know about you two guys, but of places that I would want to go and research Bigfoot, Alaska is not on that list. No way, no how. I just don't have a good feeling about,
you know, it's funny.
I just don't.
My brother contacted me a couple of months ago. He's turning 50, not this year, but the next year. And he's like, we're taking a trip to Alaska. And I was like, he's like, you in? And I'm like, hell yeah, man. And they're going to go hunting. I don't hunt. And I was like, you guys go hunting. That's fine. I'm going to go squatching. I'm looking for Bigfoot. So you said that. I was like, I'm actually planning that.
Locator beacon, please.
Yeah,
personal locator beacon.
So I don't know. I think maybe my idea of Bigfoot hunting up in Alaska, I'm going to stand at my tent with a pair of binoculars and just like throw some rocks and hit some sticks on some trees, because I ain't going too far out there, man. That's too many bears.
Do me a favor. Do not go alone. Just do not go anywhere alone. Just have a second person that's going to be with you.
Yeah,
use the buddy system, please.
Yep, 100%. So
people do it, but I don't want you to do it. I don't want to do it.
If I'm not going with you on that trip, but you know,
from New York, why the hell am I? What am I going to do out in the woods in Alaska? I mean, I'm going to go, but shit, like I said, I'm going to like hit some sticks against some trees, and you know what I mean. Hopefully, somebody knocks back, and they'll call that my Bigfoot. But on that, man, on that note, look, DJ, if you would be so kind to join us again, I'd like to do a part two on this episode. I definitely think it's warranted. And if we, look, I'd like to have Vinny back on at one point to do a UFO episode. We'd love to have you and Vinny on at the same time. That would be badass.
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We'd love to.
Yeah. So thank you, dude. Thank you so much.
You guys.
You know, for in such short notice, I know Vinny contacted you yesterday and you were like, yeah, I'll do it. And here we are. So, you know, thanks, dude. I really appreciate that. We had a great time. You know,
Mike,
anything you want to add before we go, bud?
No, I just want to thank DJ. I mean, it's a pleasure having you here. Fun conversation, awesome time. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Absolutely. It's an honor. We'll get you guys on cab as well. So we'll make that happen. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thank again for joining us. Remember, there is more to history than what's in the books. Stay out there, stay you, stay weird, and stay safe. All right, we'll catch you later. Adios, friends.
New York, baby.
There you go.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Story Of. Be sure to follow our social media accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Podcast Story Of. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is a production of Unfiltered Studios. If you would like to know more about joining Unfiltered Studios, please visit our website at unfpod.com for more information.